Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going really well, Chris. How are you?
Pretty good. We are joined by a very special guest. I'm really excited for this one. Mr. Max Barkey himself, David Sparks.
Yeah, hey, guys. You got me worried because when I was growing up, if it was a very special something, there was like teenage alcoholism or something like that. So.
Well, none of that's here. We just like to talk about iPad stuff and work, so I don't think we have to worry about that too much on this show.
Well, that's good. That's good. I was getting nervous.
So how are you doing, David?
Excellent. I'm happy to be here.
So for the few people that don't know who you are, which I would be very surprised if there's anyone that does listen to the show and doesn't, you have a podcast called Mac Power Users that's kind of been a staple in the Apple community for, 6, 7, 8 years now?
I think we're actually getting closer to 10 years.
Oh, wow.
You've got to be kidding.
Yeah, we're going to hit episode 500 in 2019, about mid 2019. So it's crazy.
That's amazing. I remember listening back on my iPod Classic.
All right.
Yeah. So this is pretty exciting. You also have some other shows, Free Agents and Automators on Relay FM. We had Rosemary Orchard on one of our previous episodes, so that was really fun. So now we get the other half.
Isn't Rose great?
Yeah, she is fantastic. We got to talk about shortcuts and stuff while iOS 12 was still in beta, and that was a lot of fun. That was a really fun episode.
And of course, you always have to remember Max Barkey as well.
Oh, absolutely.
That's been a staple of mine for a while now, and David creates some awesome field guides with it as well. And you recently came out with what, 2 in a month, which was crazy in my opinion. I don't know how you sleep.
Yeah, it was crazy, honestly, and I was totally flaky with you guys because we were going to record this a couple of weeks ago, but I was trying to get those things shipped, and then right after I shipped them, we were going to record. My wife said, "You know what? You haven't been out on a Saturday for like over a month. You should really spend the day with me."
Yeah.
I don't blame you at all for that one.
Yeah, happy wife, happy life.
But no, it was that's not my intention, is to be churning these things out twice a month. But Apple released Siri Shortcuts. I really wanted to cover that. And OmniFocus 3 came out, and I had been working on that one since March. So I really wanted to get that one out with the release.
Yeah. And I've been watching both of them, and they're fantastic. It's some of the best work you've done. And I think all of your work is great, but I think these last two field guides have been phenomenal. So,
yeah. Thank you.
I don't know if you have some special sauce that you're throwing into this stuff now, but I think with the Learn Max Sparky stuff that you've launched with it and everything else, it's been really well done.
Well, you know how everything's like an evolution. You know, I started doing the iBooks author books, and then really what I realized is people want more video, mm-hmm. and there's a limit in those iBooks author videos. Those iBooks author books can only hold 2 gigabytes, and the OmniFocus field guide is something like, I think, 7 or 8 gigabytes of video.
Oh, wow.
I mean, there's just no way I could have done that with an iBook. So it's really nice now being able to distribute bigger products.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we talked last episode, Chris, you and I read the book Getting Things Done, and we alluded to having a special guest, which is now David Sparks, and we wanted to kind of talk about Getting Things Done, and that's definitely going to be like the main idea of what we want to talk about. But I kind of want to get into the weeds with how your workflow is now with iOS 12 coming out and macOS Mojave, if that's changed anything for you, or, you know, kind of where you fall with what devices you're using, what exactly is, your day-to-day use for products and apps right now. I mean, are you still using the iPad more than anything, or have you kind of fallen to the Mac recently? Or?
Oh, no, I mean, I've never been a zealot either way.
Okay.
You know, I'm not like religiously using the Mac or religiously using the iPad or iPhone. I really like woodworking, and I'm sorry, guys. Where I live, there's a helicopter flying over my house right now. So, they have a big mountain biking trail, and somebody breaks their collarbone every Saturday morning. So that's what's probably happening right now. They're picking them up. But anyway, to get back to the story, I really like woodworking, and one of my woodworking heroes was a guy named Sam Maloof. He made these just amazing rocking chairs. And years ago, I had an opportunity to spend a day with Sam and kind of just like watch him make a chair and learn a thing or two. And one of the things he said to me because I was asking him about what tools he uses. He says, look, I don't care what tool it is. If I have to use my teeth, I use my teeth. And that like always stuck with me. And I think that's the attitude we should have towards technology is you use whatever works. You know, if the iPad is the right device for this, then use the iPad. If the Mac is the right device for this, then use the Mac. I for example, I keyboard maestro the heck out of a lot of my work. You know, the like when I make a new company for, I'm a lawyer in a day job. And when I make a new company, I've got to open up like 8 different documents, do a bunch of search and replaces and things like that. I keyboard maestro all that. That wouldn't work on the iPad. But then you look at some of the stuff I do with Siri shortcuts on the iPad, and that would never work on the Mac. So I try to use whatever tool gets the job done. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky enough to be able to afford both. Yeah. I mean, I know some people can only afford one, and I understand that. Then you got to make it work. But if you have both, I don't think you should tie one hand behind your back. Just use whatever works.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. That's a fantastic way of putting it.
I just think David's right in my head right now, because that's been an issue I've been having for months, is to, because for whatever reason, I feel like I have to choose one over the other. And I think that your analogy with the woodworking has been, it just makes sense to me. And just, you know, use the tool that works best for you. And I've been trying to say that to myself for quite a while. It just seems to be something that doesn't stick with me. Maybe it's because it's coming from me, but hearing it from you, it makes more sense. So,
well, I do think part of it is, you know, look, you and the three of us are here making a podcast about geeky stuff. So we're nerds,
yeah.
You know, let's just accept mm-hmm. that. And for me as a nerd, I love the iPad because it's new and shiny, and it's being actively figured out now. I mean, I was lucky enough to be there when we were having the same experience with the Mac, yeah. where we were figuring it out, you know, what works and what doesn't work. We're at that stage with the iPad. So I definitely spend a lot of time with my tablet because I think it's fun figuring this stuff out. But when it comes to getting the work done, I do it wherever it makes sense. And just to really answer your question, I have a home office. I work from home most days. I've got a beautiful iMac at my desk. I spend a lot of the day behind a 27-inch screen. But I need breaks, and I do not have a laptop. I have two iPads because I'm crazy. But so when I leave this little space with the Mac, I bring an iPad with me. Maybe I'm just going to my backyard, or maybe I'm going to Starbucks, or maybe I'm going to a client meeting or something. But so I do split the work in that sense. I don't have a laptop.
Yeah.
So what drew you to getting two iPads? Just out of curiosity. I know everyone calls it the multi-pad lifestyle now, and I'm just kind of curious what drew you to it, because I'm having this existential crisis of I don't know which size iPad to get next.
Yeah, it's really hard. I just wanted to experience them both. I bought the 12.9 when it first came out, the original iPad Pro. I still use it. It's great. It's a great iPad. And then when they came out with the 10.5, I kind of wanted to see. And it had been a year and a half, so I didn't feel terrible about it. And I have that one too. The way I use them is the bigger one is on a Elevation Labs draft table, which is a big piece of metal. I made a little video about it on my YouTube channel, but it's just a really solid iPad stand, and it's got 3 different viewing angles. So I keep that on the desk next to my iMac all day. So I'm always jumping in, like I'll jump in and launch a Siri shortcut that creates an OmniFocus template. Like that happens to me many times a day. And so I keep that one there, and then I keep the other one, the smaller one, by the bedside. And it really just varies. I found that usually when I leave the house, I have the smaller one. And when I'm doing anything around the house, I have the bigger one. But I do really like that big one. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, Apple's going to release 2 new ones next month. I think I'll probably just end up replacing the big one because it's 3 years old now. And just keeping last year's 10.5. But I do like having them both. But, you know, it's a pain in the neck, too. You got to keep them updated with software and, you know, it's just adding more overhead.
Yeah, I edit video on my big iPad, and I edit this podcast on my big iPad, and I like having that big screen for that, but it kind of gets to be really unwieldy when you want to go sit on the couch and read something, and I don't really want to have two iPads, but knowing me, I'll probably end up with two iPads.
And once again, I mean, I guess we all choose our poisons. We had this discussion on the Mac Power Users because Katie Katie was giving me a hard time about it, but I'm like, you know what? I don't have fancy cars. I don't, you know, I don't have a $1,000 a month golf habit. So if I want the latest and greatest from Apple, I get it.
Yeah.
And it usually works out. They have enough resale value. I mean, you always take a little bath. I just bought the new Apple Watch and I bought the Series 3 last year, which was crazy. But then when I sell the 1 year old watch, I end up getting the new one for about half price, and it's probably a waste of money, but I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's my advice.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's a great way of putting it. So with the rumors of new iPads coming, are there any like particular features or anything you're excited to see? New design, new faster, you know, CPU, GPU things. Is there anything in particular you really want to see Apple release with the next version of the iPad?
I don't really know what to think about faster, because it's interesting to me that this one that I have sitting here I think it's at least 3 years old. When did they first release the iPad Pro?
2015 November is when it shipped, if I remember correctly.
Okay, so it's not 3 years yet, but it's pushing on 3 years old. And I don't see anything where I'm like, man, this thing's slow. It just doesn't feel that way at all. I would like, because the new one that I have has the, I forget the terminology for it, but it's got the reactive screen where it reacts to the lighting in the room. And that would be really nice to have on my big one.
Yeah, I think, is that the True Motion? Or no, that's the
True Tone.
Yeah, that's what it is. The terminology, marketing teams, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But I'd like to see that. I know that it's most likely going to be edge to edge, and I'm just super curious to see how that works. Mm-hmm. You know, are they going to make it edge to edge, keeping the case the same size and giving us more pixels? Or are they going to keep the screen the same size and shrink the case around it? I'm very curious to see what exactly they do. And the fact is, I hold the iPad all the time. My fingers will have contact with an edge-to-edge screen, and I'm super curious to see how they solve that problem.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. That'll be really interesting to see. I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully, we get the announcement this month. I don't know if they'll ship this month, but hopefully we get the announcement this month. I've kind of been super getting into shortcuts a lot lately. I've really just done a deep nosedive into it. And I'm just curious if you have any like new shortcuts or something recently that you've kind of put together that you're really excited about.
Well, I did something. I just posted a YouTube video on it yesterday. I'll send you guys the link. And I was inspired by Gray over on Cortex. He talked about how he took all his apps off his home screen on his phone and just made them shortcuts. And I'm not entirely sold that's something I want to do, but I did an experiment with it. And I really like the idea, and this is very basic shortcut work too, so anybody could do this, of contextualizing icons on my home screen. Like, I built one that is the Max Sparky lightning bolt. And it's all my Max Sparky work. So if I open it, underneath it, there's a button that takes me to the inbox in my email application for Max Sparky, so I can get through my Max Sparky email inbox. There's a button that takes me to the OmniFocus planning perspective for my Max Sparky. There's a one that takes me to the OmniFocus active perspective, you know, stuff I should be doing today. There's one that takes me to an Omni Outliner document, which is the outline for my next video screencast. You know, there's one that takes me to the Google Doc where I write Mac Power Users outlines. And it's just like all contained within one icon. And then I've got this menu of items that are related to the work I do when I'm wearing the Max Sparky hat. And I've got a similar one for legal. And I'm playing with stuff like this. And it really is a game changer. Because before, where like if I wanted to get to the Omni outline for the latest thing, I'd have to go dig out the icon or search it. And then I'd have to find the document. And now it's just one button. I'm very excited about to see how this works. Like I said, I'm not entirely sold on the idea of a screen with no app icons, but it's a real powerful idea to this to context join different tasks together.
Yeah, Chris has been doing something like this for a little while as of recent. Like, it's basically a shortcut that has a menu to choose a different set of shortcuts that are in that menu that, you know, whenever they wanted. Like, that was, like, I think, Chris, you've been playing around with that a lot. I mean, I'm sure you have something to say with it, but as soon as you started talking about it, I go, oh boy, here comes Chris. I know he's going to talk about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my thought is on my iPad, I have a folder in my dock with however many, 16 icons in there. And they all are basically just shortcuts that run other shortcuts in their base. So like I have my Dropbox shortcuts, yeah. I have my draft shortcuts, I have my things shortcuts, things like that. So I really like that idea, and it kind of makes things a little more organized to me. It kind of keeps everything clean until like there's some better way of organizing shortcuts within the app. I think that might be the kind of the best way of making makeshift folders almost.
Yeah, and just while we're on that topic, I mean, what a hot mess the shortcut organization currently is in the app as we record this. It's when I did the Siri shortcuts field guide, at one point I remember spending like an hour trying to get all my icons organized and color coded and everything. And I got it perfect so I could show the user how to use it and how to do it and show off all my shortcuts. And literally as I'm pushing the button to record, I look down and my iPad just unsorted them all.
Oh, no.
And I was talking to a friend that works for a fruit company, and he was telling me, yeah, they're aware of that, and they're working on getting the syncing better. So hopefully soon that problem will be solved. But right now it's a mess. Mm-hmm. And this method of using shortcuts to trigger shortcuts really helps solve that problem. Like I was talking earlier about my OmniFocus templates. I've got 30 different project templates for OmniFocus that are Siri shortcuts. And going through this long list and trying to dig them out was completely bananas. So I made a shortcut called, the Omni Selector, and you click on it and then it says Max Sparky or legal. So it's actually got multiple levels, and then you go to the next level and then it's got the laundry list of shortcut project templates related to that. And what I've been using that for, like I said, I put them on the home screen. What I don't like about putting them on the home screen is it jumps to the Siri shortcuts app and it's kind of an ugly experience. But if you just put those in your widget screen, it's self-contained. Like I would recommend if you're trying this and you don't like the look of it on your home screen, just install it on your widget screen, and then it's a very self-contained little environment.
Yeah, I've actually moved on to having two different kinds of widgets. I have the shortcuts widget, and then I use an app called Launcher that has added support to basically put shortcuts in that as well. So I put my most frequently used shortcuts in the shortcuts widget and I have that towards the top. And then my launcher stuff that I want to have that are, things I want to use pretty regularly, but not as frequently as the ones in the shortcuts app. And I launch it through the launcher app and use the shortcuts that way. It's to kind of separate my two shortcuts of like most frequent daily use stuff. And if and when something pops up, I'll use the stuff in launcher. And that's been really helpful as well. But yeah, widgets have been great as far as using shortcuts for them to be basically self-contained and not have to have it bounce around like back in the old workflow days. I remember some workflows that I had, especially when I was using the application To-Do, it would bounce between workflow and To-Do for every task I put in it. And when I'm using something to put templates in, it basically it becomes something of a game of ping pong between the two. And it was kind of fun to watch the first couple of times, but eventually it became cumbersome. But it's nice to be able to have that stuff run in the background and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, I spoke at Sal Segoyan's automation camp last year. Mm-hmm. And at one point, me and a couple of the instructors were sitting around at dinner talking about that problem of workflow. It was clearly something that Apple never anticipated, doing work in the background. Mm-hmm. And it was just crazy the way you would watch your screen dance around. And that was one of the big benefits of Apple purchasing workflow. But it's still, I feel like there's still work to be done there.
Absolutely. Like one of my big things right now is I mentioned I edit video on my iPad. Whenever I want to upload that video to my Dropbox folder so it can just be saved for later, I have to sit there and watch the progress bar uploading. And I mean, my videos are anywhere from 3 to 7 gigs. So that takes a while on a 10 megabit upload speed connection. So that running in the background would be fantastic.
That's one where you just set it and leave the room.
Yep, that's pretty much what I do. It's at that point, it's dinner time.
Well, hey, you know what? There's a reason why you need two iPads.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for justifying it for me. Okay, sweet.
Oh, no. You can tell your wife or significant other that I said it's okay.
Perfect. Sounds great. That's perfect. So
goodness. You're going to get a lot of people in trouble, David.
Yeah, I'm an enabler, I admit it. But it goes both ways. I made a mention on the podcast about, because I've got the first generation Nest thermostat, and now almost every day a listener sends me a link to where I can get the Echo Bee on sale somewhere. I mean, just people, they're relentless.
I live in an apartment, and I'm not supposed to change any of that stuff, but some of that stuff might have been changed. So, yeah, I'm totally with you. So, yeah, 100%. I love that stuff, and I can't get enough of it. So it's pretty safe to assume that OmniFocus is your task manager of choice. I know you talk a lot about it on Mac Power Users.
What is that? I've never heard of that app.
Yeah, so it's this little app. I think it's pretty new. It doesnn't have much of a name behind it. The group behind it either. I think they only have like one or two apps. I'm just kind of curious, what drew you to OmniFocus and what's kind of made you stick with it throughout the years?
Yeah, back in the old days, there was a real like wasteland of task management apps on the Mac. I mean, this is before iPhone. I mean, it was just bad. I mean, there weren't any good task management apps on the Mac. And like and there was a couple tries, but the best try that ever was a guy took Omni Outliner and he called it Kinkless GTD, and his name just escapes me right now. But it'll come to me in a minute. But anyway, so someone made kind of a hacked together GTD system using Omni Outliner, and I used that for a long time. And the Omni group, you know, paid attention to that, and then they decided to make their own GTD implementation task manager app. So it was really one of the first real contenders on the block. Over the years, I do these things where I'll take a month. Like I spent a month using things, and I spent a month using some of the web solutions. And you know, I do experiments all the time. You know, because I want the best app. You know, I always want the best app, but I keep coming back to OmniFocus, and that's not because it's the only solution, but it is the solution that works the best with my brain. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. I'm that way with things. Like, I like OmniFocus. I think it's a good app, but when I open it, there's too many buttons for me and I feel overwhelmed. So I like things and its simplicity, but I know everyone's kind of different. So that's kind of the great thing.
Yeah. For some real-time follow-up, the guy that created Kinkless GTD is Ethan Schoonover.
Ethan Schoonover. Yes.
Sorry, I mispronounced it. Yeah. But Ethan was the one that created it. I just did a quick Google search because I knew if I didn't have it, it would be driving me crazy the rest of the show. So, I kind of want to get into the weeds with you on OmniFocus and GTD because, I mean, with a name like Kinkless GTD, I would imagine that this is something that you came to, you know, it through some stumbling and then also with curiosity with getting things done. Like, is that kind of like, I guess, what's the history of how you got started with getting things done and where OmniFocus and Kinkless GTD kind of fall in that timeline?
Yeah. It's because there's two groups of people. There's groups of people that read the book and were doing it like on paper and then found software. And then the second group is the people that found software and backed themselves into the book.
Yeah.
I was the first group, but I wasn't an immediate adopter of it because back then the internet was a smaller place and all of my friends were talking about GTD. And so much so that it started to feel like a cult and I didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I don't want to become one of those GTD people. And finally I decided, you know, I'll just read the book. And it really did help me. And the problem is I've got a lot going on. I've got a law practice. I've got a publishing business. I've got a podcasting business. I've got kids. I've got, you know, I've got all these different things I'm doing. And I found myself frequently feeling not necessarily overwhelmed. Yeah, sometimes overwhelmed, but even worse is that just that feeling that you don't know what you don't know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And there's stuff you're supposed to be doing, but you're not sure what it is. And you might have made a promise a week ago to somebody and you haven't followed up on it. And just, you know, just flakiness. And so that really bothered me a lot. And GTD kind of gives a way out of that trap. And once you start to accept, hey, you know what? I am not going, you know, I'm going to use an external brain. I am not going to carry in my head a list of everything I'm supposed to do because that's just, you know, that I don't need that. I don't need to put that on myself. And if I give my brain the ability to offload that problem and now actually work on getting things done, trademark, you know, David, Alan, yeah, David, yeah. What, you know, whatever. If I just spend my time on actually doing the work and not worry about trying to keep track of what the work is, what'll happen? And it was an immediate success for me. I mean, just the only reason I've been able to do all these things, you know, get the videos and the books published over the years and manage the law practice and do all these things is because I have a system that really supports me. And so the first one I tried to use was an app called IGTD. It doesn't exist anymore. It was a Mac app that was tried to kind of do a GTD implementation. But it was the look of it was kind of really, you know, it was that stuff that comes out of the back end of a dog. And so I wasn't a big fan of the app. Then the Kinkless GTD, because the Omni Group really pays attention to design. I mean, they're manic about it. And then when they made their own app, I got into that. In fact, part of the new Omni Focus Field Guide, the one I just released, I went in the App Store and scrolled all the way back, and you could see the very first app I ever purchased in the App Store was Omni Focus.
Wow.
And it was very GTD heavy, but it's interesting because over the years I have drifted from the path. I am not a fully vetted GTD guy anymore. I mean, I do some things that follow GTD and some things that don't. Mm-hmm. And OmniFocus, like me, has fallen away from the true belief as well, because they've added tags and they've done some other things that aren't as, you know, canon GTD as they used mm-hmm. to be. And so the app has kind of evolved with me. A lot of people like Things. I think Things is a great app. And if you use it and you like it, you know, bless you, go for it. I think it's a, you know, it's a great app. It wasn't quite powerful enough for me. Like there's some things that OmniFocus does that I really like. And, that's what kind of held me back from using it, but it's beautiful. It's a great app. Yeah,
no, I think OmniFocus 3 is very, very pretty.
With Things, I rely heavily on Siri shortcuts to kind of build out my tasks, build out projects, build out, you know, make sure everything's working. And that's fine for me. The big thing for me, what originally drew me to Things, was that update they put out with all the keyboard shortcuts for the iPad. That alone, like, that just sunk me, because I can just sit here and fly through my whole task manager just off of keyboard shortcuts for about like 95% of the app.
I feel like not only every productivity app should follow that, mm-hmm. I feel like Apple should be doing
that. Oh, absolutely.
Apple should have that built into the operating system. I mean, if they want to put an advertisement on TV that says this can replace your laptop, that it needs that sort of power user feature.
Yeah, to go back to shortcuts for just a brief second, like, one of my biggest things that I want in version 2 is global system-wide keyboard shortcuts to trigger shortcuts.
Yeah,
I know you could do it like from Spotlight and things like that, but, you know, just be able to hit like Command Shift W or something, that would be pretty cool.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, and honestly, it'd be easier than using your voice in a lot of contexts.
I definitely, you know, you're sitting at a coffee shop, or I share an office with somebody at my day job. Like, you don't want to sit there yelling at your phone or your iPad all day long, telling it to trigger thing.
And that's the other, I mean, we were talking about all the Siri shortcut bugs, but the other bug I'm having is some of the things just aren't working by voice, mm-hmm. even though they work if you play them, you know, and, so anyway, so the reason I'm with OmniFocus, it's a conscious choice. I mean, the review process in OmniFocus is super powerful. I fully found religion on tags. The custom perspectives is a real power user feature. I mean, I have gone way down the rabbit hole on that stuff, where I can put myself in strange contexts and I can still have it feed me tasks.
Yeah.
And everybody says, well, you know, that's just super nerdy. Why are you going to do that? But to me, it's like, you know, what is it? Always be selling or always be shipping, ABS. I forget what they call it. But, you know, I always want to be doing, and that way I can have, if you do it right, then when you have time and your daughter wants to go to the movies with you or whatever, I mean, the thing in your life that you want to make time for, it allows you to just drop everything and do that. And that's what a good system can do for you.
I'm dying to kind of get into the weeds with you about like how you use the system, because I've watched most of the OmniFocus field guide that you've put out, and I can't say enough about how well it is and how it's helped me a lot, especially someone that's like, that finally read the Book of Anything's Done, and like, I'm kind of going into OmniFocus 3 with a blank slate, kind of, and this has helped me a lot with it. We have a group of videos called Systems, and one of them is how you use your system. And I, when I watched that video, I was taken aback by how many custom perspectives you had and how many different folders you had and things. And it just seemed like quite a bit of stuff. And as you said, you are a very busy person. You wear a lot of different hats. You do a lot of different things. So my question is, how do you manage all of that without dealing with overwhelm? Or if you do get overwhelmed, how do you fix that?
Well, I'm always thinning it out, but I'm also always adding to it. And I think one of the things I should have said in that video is, you know, I've built that up over literally years. So It's not something you would start out with. But one of the advantages of OmniFocus is the ability to create a custom perspective. And now that you've got tags giving you multiple vectors at your tasks, you can have a lot of perspectives. And I make perspectives that are throwaway perspectives, you know, like just for a temporary time on one project. So they're coming and going all the time. Traditionally, the way I started using these things was I did what I called a defer date system. And it worked for a long time. In fact, if you watch my prior video on OmniFocus, that's the system I really kind of sold in that video. And defer date basically uses start dates. And you just say, okay, I'm going to work on this book, but I don't have time to work on it until next month. So I'm just going to give it a start date of next month. And OmniFocus, you can set the whole project with a start date, and that pushes everything in it away, or you can set individual tasks as a start date. So it would disappear. So every day I'd look at my list in OmniFocus, and the book wouldn't be there, right? And then a month later, it magically shows up again. And so I'd go through and do that with all my tasks. And it occurred to me over time that that is too one-dimensional, because for a couple of reasons. I mean, the first is, what if I mean, it's an artificial delay. There's no reason I can't work on that book right now. I mean, it's just that I don't feel like I have time to work on it. But what if something changes? And then it also became a lot of management as my projects and responsibilities increased. Suddenly, I'd find myself spending 30 minutes going through and setting start dates for things, or, you know, almost daily. And I'm like, this is getting overwhelming. So I took all that out. And now I'm using kind of a more organic system, and I'm using tags to find things. I do still have those mission critical things that I either get a due date or a flag or a particular tag attached to it that puts it at the top of the list for me. But ideally, I like to get those things done in the first 2 or 3 hours of the day, and then the rest of the day free range through the system and say, okay, well, I do want to work on that book today, so I'll go into the project and spend some time on it. And it's way more relaxing in a way, because you don't feel like you're constantly, you know, facing this barrage of incoming projects showing up on your list every day. And it's a less stressful way. The downside of it is, when you had them in your face every week or two, it forced you to review the projects that way. So if you weren't good at doing project reviews, it kind of forced you into it. But I actually am pretty good at project reviews, so I don't let anything fall through the cracks.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I'm very curious on, how the review process is for you. Is how often do you do the reviews? I know in the book it basically says to do it at least once a week, but with someone that has, you know, as much as you do, I mean, do you check it every day? Do you review on a daily basis or on a weekly basis? Like, what's some good tactics that someone can take from you on how to do a review process to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks and that you are keeping your system up to date and keeping things as lean as possible, but not letting anything fall to the wayside?
So a couple points on that. The first is, the book says you should review all your projects every week, and I disagree with that. Because I have projects that are not high maintenance projects that need me to look at them every week. You know,
right.
For my business clients, I have a corporate general project for each one of the businesses, and stuff goes in there like setting up the minutes once a year and, you know, just little random things. If I reviewed each one of those projects every week, I would go bananas. So I don't do that. I have those usually on like a 4-month schedule, where with OmniFocus, you can set the review frequency. So I say, don't bring that one up for review for another 4 months. And that's fine. I've got others that get reviewed every week. And so traditionally, the way I did it for the longest time, under the influence of the book, really, where I would just take like an hour and a half. And I used to do it Monday mornings. First thing Monday morning, I'd get up really early. I'd go, there was a Pete's Coffee across the street from my old job. And I'd go in there with a tablet or a Mac, depending on, you know, what time you're talking about. And I would just do the reviews and, you know, get a cup of tea, do my reviews. But what I found was I'm only good for review for about 20 or 30 minutes. You know, after a while, you start losing focus.
Yeah.
The idea behind a review is, hey, look at this project. Ask yourself some critical questions. The first question I always ask is, can I kill this? Is this a project that doesn't matter anymore? Because I'm always killing projects. You know, I have lots of great ideas that ended up in OmniFocus. And then after an hour or a week or a year, I realize, oh, man, this is stupid. I'm never going to do this. And I just kill it. The second question is, you know, is it on track? Look at the list of tasks. Do those still apply? Can I check some? Maybe I did one without checking it off. You know, just the whole, you just ask yourself about the project and you audit the project. But after, like I said, 20 or 30 minutes of that, for whatever reason, my brain starts drifting. And then I start marking projects as reviewed that haven't truly been reviewed. So my current system is I do a thing every day. At the end of the day, I call it shutdown. And for me, a shutdown is a bunch of steps. One of them, you know, I check my end of the day email check. I do some journaling. I've got this a whole system of what I do. Part of my shutdown is check OmniFocus review. And I go in there, and most days there's like one or two projects in there that show up for review. And I'll review them at that point and then move on. And it's a nice way to stay on top.
I think that's the review process and making sure that you do a review regularly at whatever pace that you think is right is so important when it comes to really any task management system, whether it is getting things done or something else. I think that that is kind of what can make or break your task management system to where it works for you instead of works against you. And that has been one of the biggest points of contention with me, is that I have let things fall to the crack because I'm just not doing the review process. And it seems that in the book and in a lot of places and podcasts and videos is that like the review process is probably like the number one thing that you need to kind of have in order to have a system that works for you. Do you agree with that, or do you think that there's something more important than that?
I don't want to assign priorities, but I can tell you that I've heard from a lot of people using OmniFocus over the years because I've done so much publications on it. And for most people, they don't do the reviews. And when they do start doing the reviews, they should, by the way, and when they do start doing the reviews, I often get emails from them saying, oh my, how come I didn't realize how important this was? Because now it's like, and I think maybe one of the explanations why it feels so good to do the reviews is because you have an unsettled mind when you're not doing reviews. Your brain knows at some level that there's stuff going on that you are not tracking because you are not doing reviews. And that is an underlying, you know, just it's like sandpaper in there, just kind of grinding on you a little bit. And when you get good about doing reviews, you always feel better because you know that everything is good. One of the things I mentioned in the new videos is not only do I follow the OmniFocus review thing, I also block time every couple months on different areas of my life and do what I call a meta review, where I say just look through the whole, like I'll look through all of my client, you know, tasks and projects. And I'll just sit down for an hour and go through them all and just make sure there's nothing in there I missed. And that's, I don't mark that down in OmniFocus. It's not something I check off. It's just a thing I schedule every month or two. And I do it once again with phases of my life. I don't try to do them all at once. I'll do I'll do the Max Sparky one month. I'll do the legal the next and do these meta reviews. And I think the more that you can do, the better. It's very easy to fall off the bandwagon with that stuff, but you just get back on. It's okay. Nobody's mad at you. Just start doing it again.
I'm kind of curious. Do you use a separate app for your calendaring, or do you put everything in OmniFocus? Before we got into GTD, and I had never read the book until before this, I think there is some stuff I got out of it, but ultimately, kind of like you said, I'm not a purist. I'm not a GTD purist. I think I got a lot of stuff out of it. And a big thing it harps on is treat your calendar like it is untouchable. It is the, like, these appointments are if you don't do these things, the world will end. And for me, that's not really how I've always been. I'm kind of loose with my calendar. Like, I use it to remind myself to, like, hey, you know, at 7 o'clock today, hey, you should probably call your mom, you know, hey, at 12 p.m., take out the trash or something like that, because you'll be home for lunch or something like that. Like, I don't really, like, I'm not super strict on my calendar, and I'm just kind of curious, like, where you come in on that.
Yeah, I am. I did a series of posts at Max Sparkey called Hyper Scheduling, and they got a lot of traction. I'll send you a link for it. But the I really block the heck out of my schedule. I block time a lot, and that's one of the things as I made this transition from kind of a defer date system to more of a organic system, is I wanted to make sure big projects got done, that I didn't get lost in the weeds because of the new system. So every week I actually sit down and I have a list of big projects. You know, what are the big rocks of the week? I'm sure you guys have heard that story of the big rocks. So I go in and I put those in the calendar physically, and they're in there, and I treat them like appointments with other people. You know, if I usually get them done at the time, but if something comes up and I can't do them, then I reschedule them so they do get done. And so if you look at my calendar, it's completely nuts. I mean, I put a bunch of them up when I did those hyper-scheduling posts, and a lot of people wrote me to say that I'm crazy, but I find it a very effective means of getting time out of your day. And then Mike Schmitz, the co-host of the Free Agents, was telling me that Cal Newport, the guy who wrote Deep Work, said that if you block your time, you get the same amount of work you do if you're working in a 40-hour work that you get done in a 60-hour work if you weren't blocking your time. And I don't know where he got his math, but I do think it really helps me to get the important work done. And I set alarms for them, and I generally stick to them. And it's a great thing because, like, I have a startup and I have a shutdown routine. Well, both of those include email. But when the time runs out, it's like, nope, sorry. You know, whatever email I haven't dealt with now, it's not going to get dealt with until tomorrow or tonight. And it's a good way to allow yourself not to spend the whole morning goofing off an email. And, you know, you get the alarm that says, okay, now write the Jones contract. Okay. So then you do that. You turn the page and you write the Jones contract. And at the end of the day, you've got something to show for yourself.
Yeah, I remember you talking a lot about that on Mac Power Users, and I remember thinking at the time, I was like, I don't know if I could really do that, but I've been struggling a lot with just being overwhelmed with email and just, like, a lot of different tasks that I want to do, but I don't have enough time in the day to get them all done. So that would be a really interesting way of giving myself, you know, 2 hours a day to work on this project, and at that 2 hour mark, you're done. You can work on it tomorrow or whenever the next available day is. That'd be really interesting.
It works for me because I do so many different things. I mean, you can make the argument that setting an artificial deadline breaks the flow if you're, like, really doing good on something. Mm-hmm. And even, like, when I was finishing those field guides, I did have times where I said, oh, you know what? Everything gets set aside. I'm, like, cranking now. I'm going to just go until I run out of gas today on this. So you've got to be flexible with yourself. But another advantage of the scheduling system that I've used is so long as you can set realistic expectations about how long something takes, it also really does a good job of setting your expectations for the day. Because I think one of the mistakes you can make when you get a powerful task management system is say, oh, this is great. I'm going to do these 40 things today. And in reality, maybe you'll do 10 of them. And if you start blocking time, you realize how little time there is in those spaces in between, right? And then suddenly, you're setting realistic expectations on yourself. You don't get to the end of the day and say, wow, I crushed those 10 items. I mean, you get to the end of the day and you feel that way instead of saying, wow, I had 40 tasks and I only did 10. I suck, you know? And so I think that, you know, blocking that time makes it easier for you to set realistic expectations for yourself and others. When people ask you to do something, you're like, oh, you know what? This week, I am swamped. I have blocked all my time already. So if you give me something that's so important that I need to move something else, that's okay. But otherwise, I'm going to get to this next week. And then you deliver the goods next week because you've made time for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. One of the things you said earlier is that you're not a GTD purist. And I really, that really stuck with me. And We read the book. I wasn't the biggest fan of it. And I think a big part of me was I got stuck on a lot of the business speak. You know, there was a lot of like, I'm going to go summer in Venice and go have your assistant do something or have your computer person come over. And I was like, I am my own computer person. And I'm just curious if you have like any advice for anybody that like if they get really stuck on that and they have a hard time passing through that, is there a better resource or something for somebody that if they're curious about what GTD is? But everyone says read the book, but do you have anything else that you would recommend over, you know, reading the book if you just kind of can't get through the book?
Well, I think what you do, I mean, there are some, I think, some video courses out there if you want, and there are even some book summaries, but I think the trick with it, GTD is a little bit dated. I know he came out with a new version, you know, but the I really think that you just have to look at, like, all this productivity stuff. Like, Mike Schmitz, who co-hosts Free Agents with me, reads, like, one book a week. He's got a whole podcast on that.
Oh, wow.
You know, productivity stuff. And I think that there's some good stuff in there, but to me, you just have to apply it to your life. Like the things that I took out of GTD that really stick with me is have a bulletproof capture system. Stop carrying this stuff around in your brain, you know? And then I just applied my nerd skills to that. I'm like, I don't care what David Allen does, you know? He's made a really good point here. So how am I going to do this? You know, what combination of paper and digital and do I need to have a good system to capture everything? And, you know, the review stuff really stuck with me as well. So, and working in context. So basically I just took the general points and then I figured out how those work for me. And, that really helped. And I do that the same thing. Like I read some productivity books. I talked about Cal Newport earlier. He wrote a book called Deep Work that I really enjoyed. And when I finished it, but he did something in there that he talked about some stuff in there that I would never do. But I just went back through it and made a list of kind of items that I would do, you know, ways I would implement some of this stuff. And that was one of the inspirations for me getting more serious about calendar blocking. And so, you know, you take what you can out of these things, but you should never treat any of them as gospel. You got to, you know, everybody's different.
Yeah, I completely agree with all of that. And it's funny, too, because you're talking about OmniFocus, and I don't think I ever really fully got OmniFocus. I don't know why. I've used all the task managers, and I don't think I've ever given OmniFocus a fair shake. So after we're done here, I'm going to download it and see if I can, you know, use it for a month and see if it really clicks for me as well.
It's weird because I sell a product that relates to them, and also they sponsor the podcast on occasion. But listen, if somebody made something that was way better, I would use that. I mean, getting my work done is more important, you know? So, you know, so it's okay. And when people, but because I'm kind of like so associated with it, some people come up to me and they want to argue with me. They're like, well, I like, you know, this web service or whatever. I can do it with reminders. I'm like, use whatever you need to use. You know, it gets back to the beginning of this interview. It's like, use your teeth if you have to. I don't care. Use what you want. But this works for me. And the review stuff is one of the key reasons and the custom perspectives. But I don't want to turn this into an OmniFocus commercial. But it's a powerful app. And you should try it, you know?
Chris and I have talked about this at length, like just off air and everything. Of just like, you know, I'm of the opinion of use the tools that you have now. And if you have to graduate to something a little bit more complicated or something, then do that. Because I have been that person that's like, ooh, new and shiny new app. I want to try this. I want to try that. You know, it was very hectic for me and I was bouncing between Things 3 and OmniFocus 3 when they first kind of came out and a bunch of other stuff that was like, I just couldn't think of anything of, like I couldn't focus because I was spending so much time bouncing between task managers and stuff. And then I eventually said, what am I doing? And I stuck with one application and that application at the time was Things 3. And then after using it for quite some time, there were some things that I missed about OmniFocus. And that's what led me to move over back to OmniFocus. But I would argue that if someone wants to start using a new system and stuff like that, just start using the tools that you have, whether it's a pen and paper or just the straight up reminders app right now, and then look into the other applications once you feel like you need to graduate to something a little bit more complex. But I really don't want people to get on the opinion that like, oh, I need to get this app in order to get things done. I need to get this app in order to do the work that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Because you can, I mean, before we had these fancy computers and applications, people were using, Franklin Covey? I forget the.
I used to have one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were using those and they were getting lots of work done then too. And before that, there was just notepads. And before that, it doesn't really matter the tools in which that you use them. What matters is how you use those tools. And, use your teeth. I think that's the motto for today if you have to. So,
but I do think that you need a system. You can't, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're doing big boy and big girl work, just trying to carry this stuff around in your head and think it's going to be okay, you are not going to do your best work that way.
No, absolutely not.
You have to make a decision and use some kind of system.
So, David, are there any last minute advice for anyone that's listening to this that kind of started reading, getting things done, and they're kind of thinking about how they want to use their system and things like that?
Do not try. I just told everybody to make a system, but do not try and create an entire system in a day. I think what you should do is you should make a list of things you want to improve. What are the key elements of a task management system? There's capture. How do you capture tasks? How do you process tasks? How do you complete tasks? How do you review projects? I mean, those are the big four steps. And pick one of those and say, how am I going to get better at this? And do that for 2 weeks or a month or 2 months or whatever it takes for you to just internalize that and say, okay, I am just crushing it on capture. Now, how am I going to process tasks better? If you try and do it all at once, it's just overwhelming and nothing sticks. Just like learning keyboard shortcuts or anything you do, bite off small pieces and fully digest them and then take another piece. But don't try and eat the whole elephant in one bite. You're going to have a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. David, thank you so much for being on. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. And before we really wrap up here, is there anything else that you kind of want to talk about or anything that, might have come up that you want to expand more on or anything like that? I just want to give you the opportunity before we kind of wrap up the show here.
No, thanks for having me on. I'm really glad that, more people are talking about this stuff. I think it can help everybody. So thanks for spreading the word, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for coming on.
And David, where can people find all of your stuff, like your field guides, your website, podcasts? You got a ton of stuff going on.
Yeah, the main website is maxsparky.com. All the field guides, all the ones that I can, I'm moving now over to these video products. And you can find those at learn.maxsparky.com. I say there's a bunch of free stuff there, and there's some stuff you can pay for. We've been talking about OmniFocus. I have one there in OmniFocus, and that one's still at the introductory price. So if you want to get in there and get that, I would recommend doing that soon.
Yes, absolutely. I highly recommend these. They're really good. Jeff, where can people find your stuff?
You can find me over at tablethabit.com or over on Twitter at IamJeffPerry. Chris, what about you?
You can find all my stuff at theuntitledsite.com. Links to my YouTube channel and all that fun stuff are there. I'm on Twitter at Chris_Lawley, LAWLEY. Thank you guys so much for listening. Talk to you next time.